This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Mariners last night losing 7-1. Not a good performance by Felix Hernandez. Gave up three runs in the first two innings and then just ran out of gas after five. Bullpen came in and added four more runs. So just not a good day. But, of course, lots of concern right now because some more injuries are up. Mitch Haniger didn't play because of his knee injury. You know that Mike Zunino went on the 10-day disabled list. So he's banged up. And now we find out that Dee Gordon may have suffered a hip injury. We'll try to keep you up to date as far as where that goes. But it was a big, big news day, right, yesterday, and a very positive one from the standpoint that Jerry DePoto got a three-year contract extension, well-deserved. And now how soon this is going to be before Scott Servais gets his well-deserved contract extension. Mike Majarma, the catcher who had started the season as the backup, was down in the minors. He's decided to retire. So that's now two guys from the 40-man roster no longer there. Ariel Miranda went to Japan. He was released. Now Majarma, well, we haven't made the official move yet, but now he looks like he wants to retire. Storm get a 95-86 victory over Atlanta last night. As far as news and other news in baseball, A's end up losing 10-4 to Cleveland, so Mariners have a 7.5 game lead over them. Angels get a comeback, a great win with a walk-off home run. They get a 3-2 victory over the LA Dodgers, but they're 11 games back, and those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. And joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And Dave, how are you on this Saturday?
John, doing great. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Having some good times here as we look ahead and see what's going to happen. And I guess the big story yesterday, and it happened right during your show, was that Jerry DePoto gets the contract extension. Well-deserved.
Indeed. The Mariners said that it was based on where they were 2.5 years ago and where they are now, and saw the improvement. It sounded like this is something that was going to get done all along. And because of the fact that DePoto had only signed one contract, it made sense to make sure that he was locked up before he could go into a quote-unquote free agency period, although it seems like the relationship was very good between these two sides. So, yes, an expected move and a very positive move.
How do you kind of review the 2.5 years of Jerry DePoto?
Well, what do you mean exactly?
Well, how do you kind of sum up what you've seen him do, what you like, what you don't like? I mean, how do you kind of, what prompted him to be able to get this type of contract? What do you like about the difference between him, Jackson, and Zarenczyk?
Well, I mean, they were given different mandates, I guess, coming in. Zarenczyk came in with a reputation as a farm system builder. It's what he said was going to be their priority, that we're going to all have to be patient on the offensive side of things for a while on the major league side of things, until they got the farm system fixed up. Was going to try and build it from the bottom up. That went very slowly. They missed on some draft picks, biggest ones being Danny Hulson, who wasn't their fault. I mean, he just got hurt. And then Dustin Ackley, who they took the second overall pick in the draft and had a decent rookie season and never panned out. They did not get particular value for Cliff Lee, who was one of the pieces they acquired during Zarenczyk's period. They got Justin Smoke, who had a big year finally last year, but that was in Toronto. So Zarenczyk never made it happen on the major league level. They gave him rope, let him sign Robinson Cano, which was certainly at the time a good signing. Nelson Cruz, which was certainly at the time the best signing that the Mariners had ever done. But the mistakes on the major league level eventually caught up to him. In the case of DePoto, I think that they said, look, what we want to do is we understand that our roster's got some age and we're paying four guys a lot of money, but we want to be competitive and stay competitive. And even though he had a very slender farm system, he was able to make judgments on players, brought in a whole new system based on sabermetrics and things like that, which was something that Zarenczyk really didn't particularly rely on, and the Mariners as an organization didn't really particularly rely on, which would put them behind the eight ball in terms of other people. And DePoto was good at identifying talent. The fact that the moves that he's made cost you prospects that were considered among the worst in Major League Baseball in your farm system, and then the throw-in guys you got on deals. I mean, the deal for Gene Segura and Mitch Haniger was originally was a deal for Gene Segura. He had led the National League in hits the year before. He was an established player. Haniger was a guy you were hoping on, and he connected. Marco Gonzalez was a high draft pick of the St. Louis Cardinals, but had undergone Tommy John surgery. You traded one of your top prospects for him, one of your few top prospects for him, hoping that he would bounce back and be the pitcher that the Cardinals saw. And so far, he looks like that. He's on pace to win 16, 17 games this year. So you made a correct assumption there. Segura obviously did pay off. The moves this year have certainly paid off. D. Gordon has been terrific. Ryan Healy has been terrific. So you've just had a guy who's been successful. I mean, you know, in terms of building a farm system, that's not there. But look, I think you're in a different situation with this organization, an organization that hasn't been to the postseason in 17 years. The priority is doing something with the Major League club. And so they've done that. Now we'll see. They did an extension like this with Zarenczyk, when he was having a really, they did kind of the same thing with him, alternated good and bad years. And he had a good year and they gave him an extension right at the end of the year. And wound up firing him the next season, because things weren't panned out. It weren't working out. Well, the Mariners are basically in a position to bring back almost exactly the same team next season, although we'll see what decisions they make over the next couple of weeks. And that seems like a pretty good thing with the team on pace to win 95 to 100 games this year. So the talent evaluation by DePoto has been probably the best thing that we've seen so far. I mean, in terms of building an organization, you know, we'll see what that looks like when some of their top prospects begin to make it up to the major league level. And you haven't seen that yet in just 2.5 years. You wouldn't expect to see that yet. But certainly talent evaluation has been the key to it on the major league level. And the Mariners getting something that they've struggled to get over the years, which is bang for their buck, which is really getting a quality return for the investments they're making in players. And that's been the highlight of the POTUS 2.5 years, I think.
Well, and what I like is that, you know, they've set things up where they can keep this team together for at least 3 more years. Now, some parts are going to have to go. You know that they won't re-sign Felix Hernandez. You would hope they would do something with Nelson Cruz, but they only have like about 5 free agents over the next 2 years. And Nelson's one of them. And if they take care of him, you know, they'll lose a couple pitchers in free agency. Then they'll have to maybe make some more adjustments. But they have done a pretty good job of getting a group, particularly the outfield, now most of the infield, where it's going to be together.
Right, and you know we're not mentioning Kyle Seager as one of those guys who signed for a long-term deal and is plugged in. And yeah, you're right. I mean, that's exactly the situation now. They need some more production from certain guys. I mean, catcher is on the verge of becoming an issue. Mike Zunino, despite constant tinkering with his swing, despite constant working, no question on the work ethic, is still hitting 190. I mean, you know, it's very difficult to, even with a guy with the power to hit 25 home runs, to carry a bat that's hitting just 190 as good as he is defensively. So catcher may be a position that you're looking at improving, but you'll have some latitude to do that. If the attendance goes up and the team makes a playoff run and are profitable, I mean, you'll have a bigger payroll to deal with next year too. So you can be in play for some other guys, especially when you have a season where you get to the postseason. You know, you're now working around the fringes. You now know what you have and you know what you need. And you'll find a much more willing front office in terms of willing to open the checkbook and spend money when you're already successful versus trying to get successful. So that's another part of the reason is he's put them in pretty good shape financially right now, as long as things continue the way they are. And look, the way this season has gone, I mean, as we pointed out several times on the air, they go 500 from this point on. They win 96 games, 95 games. I mean, that's fine, but that's a great year by any circumstances. It'll be their best year in more than a dozen years. So they've already kind of, I mean, you know, barring a total collapse, they've already kind of, you know, put themselves in position to where they can be looking ahead a little bit, as well as obviously getting ready for the postseason.
Yeah, and that's where I think the beauty of this is now that he's got the contract extension, he just doesn't have to concentrate on trying to, you know, see if he can catch Houston, because I don't see any way possible they can catch Houston. It's just going to be too difficult, because we're, you know, at 500 we'll get them 96 wins. I mean, maybe they can get 100, but, you know, the Astros have such an unbelievable pitching staff, maybe one of the best in baseball history. They're going to win well over 100, and so what you concentrate on is, okay, see what you can do against Baltimore and the Yankees in that one-game playoff, and then try to at least acquire more talent that still makes you better this year and next year.
Well, I agree with that, and you know, you touched on it a little bit in your headlines.
There are still other factors you got to worry about this year, and that's the health of your team. We'll see about D. Gordon, as Zanino already knows, in the 10-day DL. They've been, knock on wood in particular, in the pitching staff, healthy this year. And they're really the biggest reason, besides probably the addition of Gordon and Haniger, day-to-day basis, is their starting pitching. I mean, with the exception of Felix Hernandez, it's been very, very good. And it's been very, very good because you've stayed very, very healthy for the most part. The one exception being at the start of the year, Erasmo Ramirez getting hurt, which winds up being a blessing in disguise because Wade LeBlanc comes in and pitches so well he gets a contact extension. But, you know, for the most part, your starting pitching has been spectacular this year. And you look at wins over replacement value. I saw a Baseball Reference tweet today that lists the starting rotations in the American League, and the Mariners are fourth. You know, behind the Yankees, behind the Astros, behind the Red Sox. So, I mean, they're right up there with the elite teams. So, you know, they need their pitching staff to stay healthy the second half of the year. But this is an interesting year because of the fact that they haven't been in the postseason in forever. You know, for a team like the Yankees, a team like the Red Sox, a team like the Astros, you know, a one-game playoff appearance or even in the case of the Yankees and the Astros, not getting to the World Series can be viewed as a disappointing season. The only way the Mariners' season can be viewed as disappointing at this point in time, in my opinion, is if they completely collapse in the second half of the season and somehow miss out on the playoffs. They have had – now, the team's not going to think of it this way, but I think overall, when you look at it from organizationally, when the year is over, your goal was to end the playoff drought, period, and you're in position to do that, and that's a tremendous accomplishment. Everything on top of that is gravy. If you don't win the game, it's okay. You know, if you win the game, obviously it's a bonus. It has the feeling of – you know, which is normally the case for teams that haven't been there in a long time. It's the goal is to get there. The next step is to be successful when you are there. And the Mariners are still at the point of being the goal being to get there. And I just don't think that this year can be considered a disappointment if they make the postseason, no matter what happens in the postseason.
No, I agree. And it's like because you know you end that streak. But it is funny that and you look and you know I probably study this goofy stuff too much as far as you know analytics and all that. And I've really dug in both in football and in baseball on the run differential because it does or the point differential in football because it is significant. Because what you can see and you know you take advantage of a good schedule. That's great. I mean you have they're plus 19 right now and on pace for maybe 96 wins or more. And, you know, there's two teams that you look at that kind of pique your interest that are like the Mariners. And it was the 2012 Baltimore Orioles, and they won 93 games. It was the 2016 Texas Rangers who won 96. Same type of thing. You know, finished the season like 30 plus 30, which is, you know, basically telling you it's an 84-win team, but you're able to take advantage of it. But there's going to be a drop-off next year unless you get a little more talent.
We're talking about the Pythagorean theorem, which yep. Bases your record on run differential, and the Mariners are actually, right now, if they were to continue with the pace they were at, would set records that would probably never be broken in terms of success with that. The Rangers did it in 2016. With a colossal offense. They had a lousy bullpen, as a matter of fact, one of the worst in baseball that year, but their offense was so immense that they wound up winning a lot of 10-9, 9-8 games. And when they lost, they gave up a lot of runs and lose badly. It normally doesn't happen that way, but it is happening that way for the Mariners this year. But, you know, that stat is only relevant when it is, because as you pointed out with those last two teams, those aren't the only two teams to do it. Baseball's a funny sport, and it doesn't always correlate exactly to the numbers. And one-run record is off the charts, as we know, for the Mariners. It's absolutely spectacular, and you know, logic tells you that can't continue. But also, history tells you that it can. You know, it doesn't all the time, but there are examples where it does. So that's why I think a lot of people view the Mariners in the second half of the season as a team that'll probably be closer to 500 because they'll probably play closer to, you know, what their stats tell you. But in baseball, that's not necessarily the case. It does not have to be the case. I mean, teams inexplicably win by one run all year long in the case of those two teams you mentioned, the 2012 Orioles and the 2016 Rangers. And other teams have huge run differentials and are struggling to be over 500. So stats are a funny thing in baseball. There's tons of them, tons of ways to look at them. And depending on what you look at, it is what you see, obviously. But from the Mariners' standpoint, what I've seen the word clutch be used in a bunch of statistical things. Fangraphs did an interesting article on it as well, which is a controversial statistic because it's not really a statistic. You can't actually measure it except by seeing a team that has a huge run differential difference in terms of their wins and losses and what their wins should be under that theory. And the Mariners are, like I said, they're about to set a record that's not going to be approached if they can continue on the pace they're continuing on. And you worry about next year. And look, Felix Hernandez's start yesterday has got to have you really concerned. I don't think there's any question now that you're going to be a buyer here in the next couple of weeks. As you pointed out, Mike Martram retired. They let Ariel Miranda go to Japan. They've got three spots in their 40-man roster. I would expect a deal to happen in the next week, no longer than that, for the Mariners. They are obviously putting themselves in a position to make a move, and I would assume that getting a starting pitcher is going to be a part of that move.
Did you like a part of the press conference where Jerry DePoto, he's made like 65, 66 trades, and he says, hey, listen, not every trade is going to work. I'm going to make bad trades. And that's no general manager can say that every trade is going to work out perfectly.
Right, but I mean, you know, you're judged by the ones that do. You'd be surprised when you look at how many don't work out and how few do, and the percentages are against them working out, but, you know, it's the ones that do are the keys, and you know, people sometimes make the mistake of looking at trades and seeing what the other team got, and it does not matter what the other team got. As long as you got your value, as long as, you know, the guys worked out for you. I mean, I look at the Diamondbacks, for example, who've got to be, and I imagine to a degree they're regretting that trade for Walker and Marte, for Segura and Haniger. Yet the Diamondbacks were in the postseason last year, and they lead the division this year.
Yeah,
and even with Walker undergoing Tommy John surgery, you know, Marte is playing shortstop for him. But that's not a deal that you know, you look at it and you're like, well, it wasn't a good deal. But they've won the division. They've been in the postseason last year, and looking at it again this year. So it doesn't matter what a deal does for the other team; it matters what it does for you. And in the Mariners' case, DePoto has had more hits than misses, big hits, important hits, and the free agent acquisitions have been great too. I mean, D. Gordon. It's hard to imagine where they'd be without him. He's given them a completely new look, completely different look at the top of that lineup. We've seen that pressure work for the Mariners on a bunch of occasions this year, and it's kind of a throwback to an old style of baseball. But yeah, DePoto's right, especially him when he got here. He remade the whole thing, and fortunately for him, it worked out.
So what's on your schedule today?
I'm heading to the ballpark right after I hang up the phone, as a matter of fact.
Sounds good. So that's Dave Grosby, and we'll talk to you on 10 on Monday. It's Bob and Gros, 12 to 3 weekdays here on 710 ESPN Seattle, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to David in South Prairie. Hey, David.
Hey, John. How are you doing today, bud?
Doing well. How about you?
Well, I am really stoked about the Seahawks this year. And, you know, I was listening to NFL Live yesterday. Nobody gives us a chance to do anything this year. They said that we got like a 25% chance of even winning our division, which is fine. But what I like about what has happened is I see that we've kind of gotten rid of some of the deadwood, I call it. And I like the coaching change. But the one thing that I hope to see out of this group is, and I think it will help the style of play, is, yeah, we want. They talk about the philosophies. They want to change the schemes, the run schemes. But I'm just thinking about just the style of play, a better, more focused, more disciplined football team. Last year, even though they were 9-7 and a couple of points away from being maybe 12-4, this team played a lot of times very undisciplined, sloppy, unfocused football, especially with penalties, just massive amount of penalties. It's just really stupid penalties, unsportsmanlike conduct, late hits, roughing the passer, things like that. And I think I'm hoping that this, you know, I know they want to change the schemes and stuff, but I'm hoping that this is one area they really focus on that would really help this team shine. What do you think?
No, I agree. And see, and the one that I kind of go focused on is that, you know, it's not as if you're looking at the defense and having no idea how it's going to be. You saw it in the last seven games. It wasn't great, but it wasn't bad. Because what they were able to do is, you know, hold teams to about 22 points. That wasn't too bad, or 20 or so points. They gave up less than 200 yards passing, 61.3 completion percentage. I mean, these are respectable numbers. And why I bring up the last seven games, there's no Cam Chancellor.
They lost a lot of Pro Bowlers. I mean,
yeah, they lost three Pro Bowlers.
ESPN keeps saying, well, they've lost all these Pro Bowlers. They're not going to be good then. It's just like, well, were you not watching last year? A lot of these guys didn't play last year.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, you know, my thing is, unless they clean up the focus thing, the penalties and stuff, it's just, that's one of the things that just kind of drug this team down yesterday. How many times did you see you have a team down 3rd and 12 and we get off the field, next thing you know, you see a flag because of a late hit on the quarterback or something like that. It just seemed to happen over and over and over again last year.
Right.
You know, and I think if they really clean that up, that this team, even though you've lost the Bennetts and the Shermans, I think this could be a high-quality team.
Well, what I look at is the running game. And I know that it's funny. There's a couple comments. I remember a USA Today writer, you know, said that was ripping Brian Schottenheimer for saying that he's going to run the ball and kind of go old school. And he says, yeah, you're out of date as an offensive coordinator. But you look at the impact of an improved running game. You know, you get Ezekiel Elliott going to Dallas, and all of a sudden they go from minus numbers in the points differential to positive. You look at what happened last year in New Orleans when they get 2,000 yards.
Yep.
You know, it's, you know, that can improve this team by one or two games because now it's going to be more solid, and I think the running game is going to be there.
Well, didn't it last year in the playoffs? How many of the top rushing teams in the league were in the playoffs last year?
Eight of the top ten rushing teams made the playoffs.
Yeah. What does that tell you? Old school?
Mm-hmm.
Old school. You know, but I'm just, you know, my thing is, yeah, they're going to rush the ball and stuff. I just, like, my emphasis, I think, with the coaching staff is, let's clean things up. Let's not kill ourselves every game where we're getting hundreds of yards of penalties almost every single game.
Right.
All right, thanks, John.
All right, hey, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's, we were going to go to Richard in Seattle, but let's kind of change around here. We'll take a break and come back. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here till 12. Mariner Baseball following us. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. And hey. I hope you and Mrs. Clayton are doing well today.
Doing well today.
If not better, fantastic.
That's good.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. Yeah. So are we getting out and about here before the cleansing of the air begins tonight, apparently?
What would be the cleansing of the air? I'm kind of confused.
Rain, Mr. Clayton.
Oh, we're going to get some rain?
No rain.
Oh, no. That's not good. I'm hoping to get a jog in, but right now, don't know.
No, you've got time for that, sir. You've always got time for that.
Yeah, but I got some things on the schedule. I have to try to get some errands. I got to run today, so.
Okay.
As I do every day.
Seems like every Saturday it seems to be the same thing.
It is, unfortunately, but that's the way it is.
You're getting it done. You're old, Mr. Clayton. You're supposed to be in training now for the football season.
That's true.
And you know, you like some of these star NFL players? Are you boycotting practice?
Boycotting? Well, there's no practice going on right now.
Well, some of the stuff that they're supposed to go do and things of that nature. We're just speaking in general terms, Mr.
Uh-huh,
Clayton.
Yeah.
Anyway. So, Mr. Clayton,
mm-hmm.
on the Irish front, a bunch of wonderful things happening. Recruiting for next year is fantastic. They're ranked at number 5 or 6, depending on who you want to read. Yeah. Huskies are doing terrible at recruiting right now.
What?
they think there's a chance.
Where do you see the Huskies ranking?
They're like 33 or something.
Uh-huh.
That's not so good, Mr. Clayton.
I saw that Phil Steele had Notre Dame behind Washington in every aspect as far as what the season should go.
Well, I understand that. That's not a problem. He's the best there is, Mr. Clayton,
and
he certainly will not overlook the Huskies' recent history this last year or two. And the fact that they're coming back with basically a upper-class team to perform this season, of course. The Irish are coming back with a not so upper class team, but a real solid team, Mr. Clayton.
Well, that's encouraging.
They've got first team All Americans on the roster and second and third team All Americans. They've got talent, Mr. Clayton, especially the defense. They've got All Americans at every basic position, defensive line, linebackers, and defensive backs this year.
I'm sure that's encouraging.
The uncertainty is the quarterback, and in college football, as it is in professional football these days, that quarterback is so important to a team. And with my quarterback having problems with his sophomore blues last year, of course he would rate the Huskies better because they're coming in with a senior quarterback who's performed very well.
Right.
But Mr. Clayton, that doesn't mean that they will pan out. He also, as you noted, mentioned that the Irish were the number one dark horse spoiler to look out for.
No, they said it was a surprise team, and a surprise team is the one that is outside the four that might be able to sneak in, just like Washington was.
And hey, you know,
and remember, he had Notre Dame as the surprise team last year, and guess what? They didn't surprise anybody. They didn't get in.
Mr. Clayton, they had problems at the QB.
Yeah.
But so be it. I wouldn't worry. Mr. Clayton, don't you worry now. There's going to be a great Irish team on the field this year, and I'm not sold on the Huskies yet.
Okay.
A lot of clamor, a lot of chatter, a lot of excitement. But, you know, historically, there seems to be going flat. And once again, the conference will do them. They've got, I have read recently, Utah is going to beat the Huskies this year.
Oh, please.
There seems to be thought that Utah is a better team in the conference.
Okay. Got to run.
Sorry, Mr. Clay, thank you so much.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call as we try to put down the Irish and see if we can get them in a conference, which they much need, I think. But, of course, Irish does not agree. So, with the Mariners, of course, we can take your phone calls on that. What's your thoughts about some of the officiating things that are going on right now? Four new referees. You know, you've got the lower the helmet rule, which I think is going to be very touchy to try to see if they can get that right. That could be a big problem. So get into that. Also get into the Mariners and where you look at them and, you know, your thoughts now on how happy you are that they were able to get something done with Jerry DePoto, because that was, I think, needed. I mean, he's totally turned everything around and has really most things in good shape and now has that the joy of just trying to get through and just make the playoffs and see where it goes. But they've got such a good lead. 7.5 games right now they have as an edge over the Oakland A's and 11 games over the Angels. Again, a little concern with Felix. Felix did not have a good outing last night, only able to go the five innings, and they need more from him for that. So that's something that I think, you know, needs to be a little bit worrisome. But in the end, it's still a great situation for the Mariners, because now, you know, I think I tell you the thing. I know we're going to talk to Gary Hill at the top of the hour, but I think what we're seeing right now is the fatigue of the season starting to set in, because you see three injuries in the last 2 days for the Mariners. You know, one that puts Mike Zunino on the injured reserve list or on the disabled list. I mean, two in the last week for the Oakland A's. I mean, they lose Correa, their shortstop, and they lose their catcher. The Angels just continue. I think now they just put their, is it their eighth pitcher on the 60-day the disabled list. I mean, incredible to think how much change is going on there. So, get your thoughts on that. And, of course, how this team's been able to survive its injuries, which, of course, it isn't as injured as what we've seen from, other teams. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Also, kind of raise the thought of what you think the Mariners should do, with Robinson Cano once he comes back. I mean, that D. Gordon is going to be the second baseman. He's going to stay there the rest of the season. And what this means as far as, the long-term future of Robinson Cano, clearly you can't trade the contract of $24 million. That's not going to happen. So, what's going to be the big topic right now? But overall, it's a pretty good situation for this team as they just try to get to the All-Star break, get a little bit of time off, try to rest up, and try to get some guys healthy now that we've had the three injuries in the last 2 days. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. The thing that I kind of am looking forward to seeing is just the some of the good thoughts that are going to be there as far as what happens in the All-Star game. Selections come down tomorrow, and I was looking at ESPN, and they had Nelson Cruz being the number two designated hitter, maybe getting a reserve role there. Edwin Diaz always without question making it, and James Paxton still being able to make it. So still looks a little short for Gene Segura, for Mitch Haniger, D. Gordon, but what you look at, and that's, I think, the beauty of what DePoto was able to do is that, he was able to acquire all-star caliber players and still be able to, build that roster. And, what I like is that, he's going to give up some number one prospects and top prospects that come from international, and because he'll go and aggressively get, some of the better international players and then kind of use those as chips to try to, fill out the roster, get an emergency group of pitchers that they can bring up from Tacoma, just try to do that. But now it's also a matter of building up the roster. I guess the sad part is that Gilbert, the first round pick, has mono, and so he's not going to be able to pitch too much. And then this week they find out that Sam Carlson, the best pitching prospect in the organization, he needs Tommy John surgery, so he's going to be out till next year. So that was a blow for this team, and one that they just have to kind of deal with it right now. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Getting your thoughts here, give us a call. And of course, in the NFL, things are going to pick up this week. There is going to be a supplemental draft. In the supplemental draft, it will have four defensive players and one offensive player that's probably not going to get drafted. The two names to watch, Sam Beal, 6'1", 185-pound cornerback out of Western Michigan. He's going to get drafted by somebody maybe as high as the third round. He's kind of that angular type of cornerback that the Seahawks like. He's got good length and arm length and all that stuff. The other one's going to be Adonis Alexander, cornerback out of Virginia Tech, who's 6'3", also is good man-to-man. He's probably going to go in the fifth, maybe the sixth round. That could be an interesting bargain for this team. Now, as far as some others, there's Brandon Bryant, a cornerback out of Mississippi State. You've got Marty Carter, a running back out of Grand Valley State, who's not expected to be drafted. And then out of Oregon State, Bryce Oguagu, who is a linebacker. He may or may not get drafted. I think he's going to be more of a free agent someplace. So that's the supplemental draft that's coming up ahead. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Kind of get your gauge as far as what's your thoughts as far as the Seahawk running game. Do you anticipate it's going to be better? Now, again, unfortunately, it's not been open to the public, so you've not been able to see what Greg Bell and I and others have been able to see, which is they do look better, and the running backs are running well. But of course, I say that looking at last year, and you look at the talent at the backfield position, and it also looked good. it looked good because you had the fifth best back as far as I think the way he performed was Alex Collins, and Collins ends up going over to Baltimore and gaining over 900 yards. But Chris Carson looked outstanding. He really did. He's added about 8 pounds of muscle. He's edging closer to 230 pounds, and I think you can see that's one of the goals that they want to have. They want to have 225 to 230-pound type of running backs that can get power, catch the ball, do all those positive things. And so that's the strategy it looks like they have as far as drafting. Rashad Penny looks really good, and I think there's optimism that he can come back and have a really good season and see how he kind of gets in there and kind of fits what they're looking for, somebody who can catch the ball, somebody who can come out and, do good things overall. But I think there's a good positive feel for what they have going and what they have going with injuries. Give us a call and give us your thoughts on the running game, your thoughts on Russell Wilson. Also, here's an interesting one to kind of gather. It's like, okay, if you can take one of your third contract guys, whether it's going to be KJ Wright, who's had two contracts almost now expire, and you've got Earl Thomas, which one would you give? I mean, knowing it's going to cost more for Earl than it's going to be for KJ, and not knowing for sure if Earl really wants to be here or not. I mean, he has asked the Cowboys to come get him. The Cowboys haven't come get him. Maybe there's an outside thought of that, and he's going to hold out. So get your reaction to that at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. KJ Wright, or do you want Earl Thomas? Or do you want to get both, knowing it's going to be extra costly? And then what do you do with Frank Clark? Because it's pretty clear that to get Frank Clark, it's going to be in that $14 million range. Danielle Hunter, the defensive end from the Minnesota Vikings, that was the deal that he received. And so now they have to kind of come close to 14, or if not a little bit more, to get something done with Frank Clark. Do you want to do that deal? Do you want to wait? How do you want to handle that? Let's get your thoughts on that. And again, on the Mariners side, Felix having the bad outing. So he's had five good ones in his last seven. And, this one was 5 innings, 3 runs. But again, like he's done so often, gave up 1 run in the first, which is actually not too bad compared to the past, but also giving up 2 in the second and 3. So that's 3 in the first 2. So that put them behind, and they never really caught up. Bullpen came in, gave up 4 more runs in the final 4 innings, and it was an easy 7-1 victory for the Colorado Rockies. So now James Paxton is going to be on this afternoon. Big game for him to try to at least even this series and set it up so that the Mariners can try to get the victory and get that, get a little bit of an edge on Colorado and try to get an edge. They've got 17 more games interleague. The good part is they only have one trip between now and August 14th where they have to go into a National League park, because that's eventful is that means you have to sit Nelson Cruz pretty much for 3 days. And so Cano comes back on August the 14th. And so when you take Cano out of the lineup, which knocks you down 0.4 runs per game because they go from 4.6 to 4.2, then the next challenge is going to be, how much do you lose without Cruz? Does that sink you a little bit below 4 and really put your offense in a little bit of a tough spot? In fact, for today's game, the offense is going to be in a tough spot because, got 3 injuries that they're playing with. One, Mike Zunino is not going to come back. They're hoping to get Mitch Haniger out there with that knee injury. Don't know about D. Gordon. We'll get that update coming up here in about 10 minutes from Gary Hill to see what's going to be looking like as far as who's in and who's out. Is there going to have to be a roster move? All those different things are all germane right now. So your thoughts on that. And also, if you're going to be making a trade, what would you want the Mariners to try to go get? I think, do you want a starting pitcher? Do you want a reliever? What do you want? I would imagine that, with the innings that are being accumulated right now by Marco Gonzalez and James Paxton, that, they want to start stretching out some of these starts, and they might have to go to a 6-man rotation to try to make it a little bit easier, because, at some point you don't want to try to go beyond too much on these innings pitched, because that becomes a problem. It becomes a problem because, you know, Paxton has never had this type of a big season where he's stayed healthy all the way through. This is the first, and, you know, you're knocking on wood to make sure that continues. And Marco Gonzalez has just been sensational in, you know, really pitching to where he was supposed to be when he was considered to be the best pitching prospect in the St. Louis Cardinals organization. So they definitely need to make sure that they watch that and that doesn't get to be too bad. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. On the National Football League front, again, there's a kind of the quiet time right now. I still find the one thing that amazes me is that there has not been, you know, a lot of arrests. I mean, so far, unless I miss something, I mean, sure, some guys who are retired have been arrested, but of the current group of NFL players, you have to go back to May to be able to find anybody who's been arrested, and that's very encouraging. And so if they can keep that pace for the next 3 weeks, would be a remarkable accomplishment by the National Football League to at least you know, not be in the news with too many negative things, and also for the players not to put them in the position to possibly be suspended. Yeah, we saw four suspensions this week. You know, you got the Julian Edelman PED suspension being upheld. You also were able to see three more, Aaron Jones and two others. Let's go to Taylor. Hey, Taylor, how are you?
What's going on, John? How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Hey, I just got a question about just how the Seahawks have drafted the past couple of years, and whether or not you thought what they've picked in the first three rounds has been, I don't know, like recipe for success. If we go off what the Eagles have done with Howie Roseman and how they've gone off the draft, they didn't draft running backs high. You know, they didn't draft cornerbacks high. They got them at a value because they can in later rounds. Do you think picking Rashad Penny with that first pick, you know, we can say as good of a player that we might think he'll be, but with that value and that draft capital, do you think in the past couple of years with Christian Michael and Turbin and Penny, with spending those picks, do you think that we've hurt ourselves by not using later picks on running backs instead?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, you particularly with the need, and I think what you're probably not referring to, but I think what you can see is that the urgency on offense has maybe changed a little bit of what John Snyder has done. And what I mean as far as the urgency is that, I mean, you know how everybody was criticizing the fact that they didn't invest in the offensive line and all that stuff. Well, I think, you know, because of the needs on the offensive line, you know, they had to use a second round pick on Ethan Posick, a first round pick on Jermaine Ifedi, and then hoping these guys can eventually become good players, still to be determined. Then, of course, with the running backs, you know, they tried to get a third rounder on C.J. Procise, but he just hasn't stayed healthy enough. And then the need was there, and this was a back that they really felt good about. I mean, they felt he was the second best back. And if you talk to anybody who's watched San Diego State football, you know, it's like he was unstoppable. I mean, you know, he was out there, you know, because they had. I mean, because he led the nation in rushing last year. And the year before, you know, he gained, I think, close to 1,000 yards, if not more, when they didn't even have him as a starter. I mean, you know, they had another drafted player that was the starter. In fact, a drafted player who ironically went to the Philadelphia Eagles. And, you know, of course, he didn't surface. You know, they had to end up making a trade for Jay Ajayi and then, of course, signing LeGarrette Blount last year to get their running game. So I know it's not big to draft running backs. It seems like you shouldn't. But if you need one, it's so important. And I just go to the numbers. The numbers, when you look at, if you can improve to like 1,800 to 2,000 yards rushing, all of a sudden you're anywhere from 100 to 150 as far as the point differential. And when you're that way, you're now closer to an 11-win team if you have a decent defense.
But if you had, instead of picking Penny, a top talent safety at that position, or if we had traded up and gotten Derwin James when we could have, you know, instead of using that on Penny and, you know, giving, you know, a top five quarterback in the league, mm-hmm. I strongly feel like if we had used that pick, I love Penny. I like the pick. I like the sense of getting back to the running game. I like the pick. But I just feel like after analyzing Howie Roseman and how he's used the draft to just slingshot himself and using on defensive line and offensive line and then going and getting those safeties like Jenkins, you can get great value at running back, and I just feel like with the top five quarterback, it might have been better, you know, even going offensive line again, or you know, like the Eagles, you know, they have nine pass rushers that they just rotate. Mm-hmm. And we could have gotten a pass rusher, you know, with one and two.
Yeah, but again, this was not a good pass rush year. It wasn't. And so, you know, you can look at past drafts and compare when they got good pass rushes, but this was not a good pass rush draft.
Yeah.
I mean, they still think that they may have gotten a good one with, you know, Rasheem Green, you know, out of USC, and they did address that. But, you know, drafting a safety, it was like Derwin James, because, again, you'd have two draft choices before last year, and you don't know how well they're going to fit in because they haven't played much. They've invested at the safety position.
And do you think we'll end up trading Earl before the season starts for a second or a third?
There's no way they're going to get a second, and it's debatable whether they can get a third. I think the way it's going right now, it seems to be more that he'll be out than in. But again, if you can't get the offer, I mean, this team still has control. It's like, because again, they have his contract, and if he wants to miss time, he misses time. That's the unfortunate part, but they still have control of the situation.
What happens if he holds out for the entirety of the season, and then does he just get released at the end of the season?
No, he does that, the Seahawks are sitting golden because they'll have his contract for next year. His contract will be told, and he's going to be in the exact same position as he was this year, except he didn't make any money, and they save $8.5 million of base salary.
Oh, wow.
So, at the very least, he'll be there for the last six games.
Yeah.
But again, that saves them like about $6 million
back for that first week.
Yeah, he's not going to hold out into the season. Simple as that.
No Cam 2.0.
No. I mean, it's too costly. I mean, you know, his idea is getting money, not losing money. And he's going to lose enough money in this holdout that it's not going to work. Hey, Taylor, thank you for the good call.
Thank you so much, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, Gary Hill giving us an update on what's going on with the Mariners. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.